It's time to talk about the outdoors in South Alabama. Hunting, fishing, and getting outside along the Great Gulf Coast. It's time to take it outside with FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. With reports, stories, how-to information, and Dr. Bill's Marine Forecast. Here's Sean Sullivan and Mike Ward.
And here we go. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Glad to have you along. And now it's starting to feel a little bit more like hunting season.
It's hunting season.
You know?
Two different ways.
Yeah.
Weather and the season's open.
Yeah, well, we've got open season, but we now actually have some weather to go along with it.
Finally.
All right.
It's been terrible.
Yeah, and it's kicked fishing into a new level as well, as you've got that water temperature dropping and the trout and red fishing, especially trout fishing, it's been picking up. So that's one good thing. And I bet you those green trout have picked up as well.
Guarantee you they have.
We're going to check bass fishing on the causeway with Captain Wayne Miller coming up later in the show. Plus, Seth Maddox, he's the waterfowl coordinator for the state of Alabama. We're going to talk some ducks after it opened the first split last week. And now we got today the second split opening up that runs on through the end of the season. So we'll talk some ducks. But first, let's talk some deer. And you actually have some deer stories to tell. I have a bunch of deer watching stories. You've got some, you got some deer killing stories.
Well, just one. You know, my grandson did kill a nice 10 point.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, it was kind of a tall rack. It wasn't very wide, but it was kind of a tall
beautiful buck.
You know, the picture, I think, makes him look a little bit bigger than he is. He's about a 115 class, which is a nice buck. You know,
man, I thought he was a great buck.
But, you know, that's the best one I've got on camera.
Yeah.
Isn't that's unbelievable. We're in Marengo County, and that's the best deer that we had on camera. I don't understand.
I thought he was a pretty buck.
Well, he is a real pretty buck. He's a pretty buck. For my grandson, 14 years old, he's tickled to death with him.
Yeah.
You know, so we'd like to kill another one just like it. If we find another one that size or a little better, we're going to get him too. But anyway, it's a little strange where I'm at this year. I'm not seeing as many deer as I normally have. And my neighbor says the same thing. He's not seeing as many deer as we normally have. And I can tell you
number of deer in general?
Deer, period. And I can tell you why I know we don't have as many, because my grass fields are about 8-10 inches tall. That's a bad sign. Now, I don't know. Last year, my fields were eat down to the nub. It's like, why you even come to green fields? Nothing in it.
They just flat destroyed mine.
Yeah. So what's the difference from last year to this year? I have no idea, but
is there anywhere nearby that they could be on acorns and off y'all somewhere?
Yes, there is, across the street.
Okay.
And down the road a little ways, there is a big hardwood bottom down through there. So yes, that's a possibility. Not seeing as many hogs as I was seeing.
They'll be over there.
And there, I feel like they're over there too. Now I'm still seeing some, but not as many as I was seeing. So I think that might have a factor.
A little migration, like they do in Africa, the big migration. They've gone across the street here.
Yeah. But last year, you know, same thing, same time of year, my grass has been eaten down pretty hard. So I don't know what time.
Well, they're just corner. It's more yellow acorns somewhere else.
I got yellow acorns too. I got a good crop of them.
You got a good crop of yellow acorns?
No problem there. I don't know. It's just kind of strange. My neighbors are saying the same thing. They're not seeing near as many deer.
What do you see in like an average afternoon on a green patch?
Well, I've got a green field we call the south field.
I bet you it's on the south end of the property.
It's on the south
end.
See,
I figured you out, okay. Ward.
And you're so smart. That's why I like doing this with you. You know, it's funny. I've got 7 bucks coming in there. And not one doe. Not one doe. And I'm not getting them on camera, not getting does on camera at night, nothing. 7 bucks, the same buck.
Boys club.
I guess so. And then I got 3 main fields. I got 7 fields, but 3 main fields we hunt, and the middle field. I'm seeing.
Better know where that one is.
Right in the middle of the property. How about that? And then, I saw probably 10 deer. You know, on that field.
All does there or mixed?
Mixed. I saw a couple smaller bucks, and that's actually where Dylan killed his buck.
Okay.
And I hadn't seen that deer. That's one thing, too. We hadn't seen that deer in a month and a half or maybe longer.
But you showed me pictures of him on camera earlier in the year. The second I saw that picture pop up on Facebook of that buck, I said, I've recognized that buck.
But I only had a couple pictures of him when I showed that picture to you, 2 months or more ago?
Yeah.
I only got a couple pictures and only had one other picture since then. And it was just a one time. He looked like he was just walking through. And that was it. And then we were surprised to see him, to be honest with you, because we hadn't had any pictures on him anywhere.
So you're seeing some of these patches, 10 deer.
Well, there. And then
what size patch?
About 2 acres.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. And then the other field that we hunt pretty regularly, man, I'll probably see, we've only hunted it one time this year, but I'd say about 6 or 8 deer, something like that. Where used to.
Yeah, what it, compared to
used
what
used to, you could never go in any of these fields, any of them. I don't care if you go at 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock, 3 o'clock, you're going to run deer out of them every time you go in them, period. This year's not that way. I mean, a field that we always see deer in, I don't care what time of day we go, we've been there several times feeding the deer, never even seeing deer. You know, different, like early in the morning, midday, afternoon.
Did you see during the summer on your camera survey where the numbers down?
Yeah, I didn't see near as many deer.
You don't think y'all had EHD or something up there, do you?
I don't know. That's what I'm saying. I don't know what the situation is because
I'm not
seeing. Are
they across the street or is it EHD?
My neighbors across the street's not seeing as many deer.
So
it's, I don't know. There's something going on. I can't tell you what it is. I just don't know.
You know, but it happened like that. I remember hearing, if you and I talked about it, but friends of mine that hunted near Dayton and all that, there was a period there, and I forget how long ago it was, 15 years ago or something, that the population really took
That was about somewhere around 15, 16 years ago.
It took a real dive. That maybe people were – they thought they – because it was shooting does, they thought, or whatever, but I was hearing from people up in that region that they didn't have the deer they had before.
Undoubtedly, it was EHD. I know on our property, the grass got to be about 1 foot plus tall.
In that,
and we were inside a game fence at that time. And the year before, all our fields were eaten down.
Yeah.
You know, and then the next year we go and the grass is just waving in the wind. And you'd go, the year before, we'd go and see 15 plus deer on a field in the afternoon, maybe 20. And then the next year, we might not see any or one or two.
Wow.
And that's inside of a fence. So we had a big die off. That was a strange thing. You would think there's dead deer everywhere, buzzards everywhere. You know, we only found a couple of dead deer. It's strange.
But maybe it works that way because they don't all die at one time. You know, and so the scavengers can get to them.
Yeah, you still see some bones around. You know, walking around and stuff. But we didn't. We only saw a few dead deer. And then I had a friend of mine that had 400 acres, and it was the same way. Every time he went, he'd see 4, 5, 6, 8 bucks, and he wasn't inside a game fence. But then that year, he saw one buck. It was the last weekend of the season. It was a spike.
Wow.
So, yeah, there was a big die-off up there, I think 15, 16 years ago.
Well, but it had definitely recovered. I know that conversation.
Oh, yes. It definitely recovered. No question about it. You know, everybody's seeing plenty of deer up there. At least it had been.
And then this year, all of a sudden this.
All of a sudden this. Now, I don't know if we had some kind of a die-off. I haven't seen any dead deer, any skeletons or anything. So I don't know. I don't have any idea.
Send us an email to Sean, S-E-A-N, at fmtalk1065.com, or can drop us a line over on our Facebook page. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Make sure to put that Outdoors on there on Facebook. Drop us a line if you're seeing, like Mike is, a drop off. So, well, I'll say this: great buck, good for Dylan. Hope the deer show back up.
He's tickled to death. So that's all that matters.
I imagine it's a beautiful buck. So that's good. I have no reduction in deer numbers.
Yeah,
well, minus one. We got one doe killed.
You run over with a car?
No. One of the guns out there after missing. Finally connected.
Yeah.
And
so who killed?
Well, a buddy of mine, you know, the hunts with me all the time. So he killed a doe. But other than that, it's we got to reduce some does.
Yeah.
And it's one of the things that that happens because I'll get to go on an afternoon during the weekday or something. And, you know, I'll kill a doe on the weekday. And then it's, you know, you go through, this happens every year. And it's, you know, shame on me because this is one of, we talk about all the management that I do and management techniques. One of the key management techniques is taking mouths off the property.
Right.
You just got to do
if
it.
If you got too many, that's what you need
just
to do.
You just got to do it. So,
yeah. And it's hard. You're trying to kill a buck too, and you know, Twos don't come into late, too, and you think, well, dadgum, it's gotten late now. I'm sitting here for 2 hours now. It's prime time. I hate to shoot one. Buck might walk out. And
I know.
So it's hard.
I've got the other night on Tuesday night, I hunted, and I had a couple of the Magnum swoop-neck does that, while they're your best breeders, and you should keep them, there's a couple of them that are so bad. This is a shooting house that had not been hunted this season. And they walked out. Their heads were out in the field looking into the shooting house before they ever stepped into the field.
Yeah.
And they go study that. It was a smaller field, not one of our big ones, maybe half-acre field. They just come down, stand at the shooting house and look. All the rest of deer act right, but there are about four of these that I should have opened up automatic fire on.
And they're teaching the young ones, too.
Oh, my gosh. The young ones are just trying to eat and be deer. They're jumping around and trying to make them spooky. But
I tell you what, it's kind of a treat for us, too. You know, we've been feeding deer, you know, corn since we've been able to.
Right.
And filling the feeders up. And every time I go to a feeder now, I'll take corn and throw it out of the feeder, you know, or throw it on some on the ground. Then I'll make noise on the feeder. And we'll just wait a couple minutes, and here come deer. And we had some the other day. We just sat on the buggy right by the feeder and had about six or seven does and yearlings come right up and start feeding right by us. And we sitting there talking, and they just look at us and go back to feeding.
There you go. You train them up.
It's amazing how you can train animals like that.
That's right. That's right. But somebody else is obviously training them better across the street. That's where the deer went. My patches look like a dang green on a golf course there.
Yeah.
Flat hammer at everything I can do.
You got too many deer. Kill them.
I know. You're coming with me, right?
No.
Hey, we're going to talk some ducks when we come back. Waterfowl Director, Coordinator for the State of Alabama, Seth Maddox, joins us next on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward. Glad to have you all along. And it's that time of year. Lots of stuff to do.
Man.
Got to decide.
Speckled trout fishing is turned on big time. Bass fishing in the Delta is awesome. Deer hunting going on. Duck hunting happening.
Yeah.
Golly.
So there's that.
Hey, they're catching them out in the Gulf right now, too.
I don't even start with blue water fishing with me. We're going to have to put that in the mix as well. Right now, we're going to stick on the waterfowl front, and it's always fun when we get the migratory bird coordinator for the state of Alabama, Seth Maddox, to join us, and he's doing it right now. Hey, Seth.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Good.
It's good. It's duck season, man. It's good.
Yeah, always exciting.
So here we are at the start of the second split, or the majority of duck season. If people haven't been paying attention to this, we're now through when do we close?
We closed last Friday, Saturday, after Thanksgiving.
I'm saying for the January, what is for the close?
January 31. So we have 58 days left.
So there we go. We've got those days left. I want to talk about – let me talk about something real quickly, too, that people – because we didn't get to talk during the youth season, and I was explaining to people on there, but can you explain how we do youth season dates now versus what it used to be?
Yeah, so we get two youth days, and we've rolled those into – we have a new veteran or active military hunting days, and so those are combined. We get a choice of 2 days outside the regular season, and those can be within 14 days either before or after the regular season. So we have split those days, so one Saturday before a week before the regular season opens, and one Saturday after the regular season closes. And we did that just because, people typically take their kids afterwards on the Saturday and Sunday when we used to do it like that, but not a lot of people took them on Sunday. So there was a lot of action on Saturday, but not a lot of action on Sunday. And then what our train of thought was on the opening, before the season is that the birds are new. They haven't been messed with at all. It gives the kids a little more action up front. The weather's a little nicer, and it gets them excited to go during the regular season as well. So, if you take them after the season, they're excited for another, 6 months, 9 months before they can go again. But if you get them going at the beginning of the season, they want to go all season. So it's a good way to get your kids out there and take advantage of that.
Yeah, and I'm glad y'all did it. I look at it this way, that it seemed to me, that before it was based on that Tennessee Valley mallard shooting. In other words, you waited till after season and you had a real good chance of having some mallards in there. But down in my neck of the woods, hunting's often best right at the beginning with calendar ducks down here. We get a bunch of, you know, we get that full moon coming out of October and November. We get ducks, whether it's cold or not. So,
yeah, you get a little more variety at the end of the season, but you get your odds of bagging ducks are a little better at the beginning of the season, I think.
That's what I like. I like having them close for the kids to shoot, and it's a good thing to split it that way. All right, let's talk about a couple things here. The fall flight overall, if people didn't look at this, what are we expecting? I know we talked in the summertime about it, but to refresher here, are we on a good track, bad track, medium, neutral? Where are we?
Yeah, it's hard to say. I think we're probably about average. We're probably a little better than average. You know, we didn't get the survey this year. COVID's kind of screwed everything up this year. So there was no spring survey in Canada and the northern U.S. So pretty much what we relied on is we have a long-term data set, you know, from flying these surveys for the last 60 years. And we were able to, you know, average that out, look at some of the population metrics, and come up with a population. So it's about the same as last year. Fall flight is, you know, it looks good. Overall, we're going to be about average for duck season. Who knows what the weather brings? You know, the long-term forecast says cold during December and warming back up in January. And so the cold part has come to fruition so far. Mm-hmm. We got this nice cold front, so who knows what kind of ducks it pushed down. And I hope that the second split opener is really good. But, you know, we're dependent on that cold weather always, you know, since we're at the bottom of the flyway. And so we need snow and ice. You know, the last 2 years have been a pretty poor duck seasons because they've been pretty warm. They've also been really wet. The forecast this year is, to be drier than the past 2 years. So I imagine that the ducks won't be spread out quite as much as they have been the last couple years, but we still need that cold weather to push them down here. So we'll see. I think it'll be a little better duck season the last couple years, but
that ain't saying much.
that's true.
You know, something I had it open on my screen here. Somebody want to take advantage of this, go to outdooralabama.com and look at your reports, you know, that go back a decade and even some that are older. I was looking at, and I was studying, obviously I'm, you know, focused on the Mobile Tensaw Delta. That's where I grew up duck hunting, still duck hunt there every year. And looking at the, you know, y'all have it broken down for average hours per trip and average ducks per trip. And it's interesting to see. I wanted to go look at the mid 90s when it was just, you know, it was just fantastic down here. But then I wanted to go back to when I started hunting in the late 80s too, and we can definitely see. And I'm not saying I know exactly what went into this because it may be bigger factors and local factors, but we definitely have seen a reduction in ducks per hour of hunting. Right? I mean, it's y'all got the stats on it.
Yeah, no doubt. Especially down there in the Delta, you got the short end of the stick down there, being mm-hmm. the very far end of the state, right on the coast. You know, whether you believe in global warming or not, you know, whether it's man-made or it's natural, it's occurring.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the temperature has risen a good 5 or 6 degrees in the last 40, 50 years. And, you know, ducks don't have to migrate as far. They only want to migrate as far as they have to because they want to be fat and happy and make it back to the breeding grounds to reproduce. And so if there's no cold weather, if there's no ice and snow on the ground, then they're going to sit and be happy in those mid-latitude states like Missouri or Illinois versus coming to Alabama. So, yeah, it's kind of discouraging. We've definitely seen the effects of the weather changing. Especially down there in Mobile, where it's been exacerbated versus North Alabama. And so, you know, long term, I don't know what it's going to do. It's hard to tell. But right now it's not great.
Yeah. It's not. And it's, you know, there's a combination. There's things we can deal with down here. And y'all have done that with having a refuge area to rest them, having bay grass and big batty with no motor zone so they don't get pressured run up all the time. That is, and I appreciate that, and the limiting on the days and going back to, you know, taking pressure off them. But you can only work with what you're given with that, right? I mean, you could maximize those ducks that get here, but they got to get here.
Right. I mean, there's certain extrinsic factors that we can't deal with, like weather. We can't control the weather, and so we can't do anything about that. The only thing we can do is provide the habitat, provide the hunting pressure, and limit that, and, you know, hope that the ducks get to where they need to get so that our hunters can take advantage of that.
Yeah, because we do get, I mean, it's obviously it's been reduced, but we do get those gray ducks coming in early, and we call them Mobile Bay PhDs by the end of the season. They know what a blind looks like. They know the name of every hunter out there, but whatever we can do to keep them around at least keeps our hopes up that we might get a shot at them.
Yeah, and that's the thing is, like, as the season progresses and ducks get stale, as they say, mm-hmm. You gotta be smart. You can't. You need to use your scouting to use binoculars to scout. Don't run up all the ducks because that pushes them to places where you can't go to hunt. Just be smart about hunting and take advantage of the days that are good days and there's going to be some bad days in there as well. But do all you can to protect the thing you love.
Yeah, I want to and. Going to be at the go to the break here in a second. We'll come back and talk more. But I'm just going to say this. I don't know if this starts trouble or not with the state. But, you know, when I was young, first started duck hunting, we had different zones in Alabama. And you mentioned it's how different it is, Tennessee River Valley up north. It is down here. Is it hard to do your job and manage a state that for waterfowl that says, I mean, Louisiana that's a lot squattier of a state. Now they got way more ducks. They got at least three zones that they hunt there. Alabama that goes a long way between Mobile and Scottsboro, and you got one set of dates.
Yeah, I mean, it's not too hard because typically how we set our season dates is that I start at the end of the calendar year, so January 31 is the last day I can go to, and I count backwards 60 days.
Right.
I mean, our ducks aren't showing up in October, so there's no reason to have the season open in October. The only thing, if we wanted to split into two zones, we could do that again, but it wouldn't change things a whole lot, I don't think.
There we go. Coming right back, we'll continue this conversation with our buddy Seth Maddox, migratory bird coordinator for the state of Alabama, right here on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Welcome back, FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward, glad to have you along, and good to talk to the migratory bird coordinator for the state of Alabama, Seth Maddox. And so, I mean, we're looking at just kind of medium. I mean, it's not any dire prediction, but it doesn't sound like you're jumping up and down and waving pom-poms now for this duck season.
Well, I think it's going to be better than the last couple of years, but that's not saying a whole lot.
That's right.
I wouldn't hold your breath, but, you know, take advantage of those good days you have.
What about, let's talk about what seems to be, you know, Alabama's mallard, the wood duck, our perennial duck. How are we looking on wood ducks? Y'all have any idea, like, long term? I think I talked with you about this last time. Are the increase in limit making any difference? We still have plenty of wood ducks. What are y'all seeing?
Yeah, you know, we push it to the limit every year on those as far as the harvest rate goes. We don't have good population surveys on those because of their habitat. They're in these beaver swamps and scrub brush swamps where it's hard to survey from the air. And so we rely on banding data and harvest data for the population there. Population is looking good, but we push the harvest to the limit every year, especially in the northern part of the flyway. And we get a lot of their birds down here during, you know, the late winter in December and January. But the population overall is looking good for those. From the data I've seen from our WMA so far, they took it on the chin opening weekend here because that's a lot of what was here, bat and ringnecks. They always take it on the chin opening weekend.
Thank goodness they're there though, because
and we have plenty of them. So you know the population is looking fine, and I'm glad we have that third wood duck in the bag now.
Now, though, I want to switch gears here as the migratory game bird coordinator for the state of Alabama. I talk ducks with you a bunch and sandhill cranes, all this kind of stuff. But I got one more thing here. And this is, I know it's site specific and there's people that they're having their best dove season ever. But I'll tell you right now, I'm in Mobile County and I know a couple other guys we're in Western Mobile County and we're just not seeing any doves. I mean, I say any, but I mean, you prep in a whole field and there's six Seth, you know.
Yeah, a lot we got a cold front early in September that kind of screwed them up a little bit, but I imagine you'll start seeing more here when the third split opens on December 12th. So we got another month of dove season ahead of us. It's a good time to get out and get after them. Not a lot of people are pursuing them this time of year. That hurts a little bit when you start. They don't move around a lot. They're right. Pretty, when it gets cold, they don't move. They like to sit in the sun and bask in the sun. But, good areas to look at this time of year are agricultural fields that have just been harvested just been cut, or disked under for the winter. Clear cuts are really good this time of year. If you got a nice clear cut on your property that's recently been cut, those love those, especially with the ruts hold from the machinery holds water, and they got food and water right there. So it's a good time to go. It's almost like quail hunting in a clear cut this time of year for doves.
Just walking them up. I remember we hunted them at a clear cut where it butted a right away, and there was that woolly croton. Is that how you say it? Woolly croton?
Right.
That was growing there, and when that was bush hogged on the right of way, then we'd have doves.
Right.
As a native plant, but they seem to really work that over. But it's, well, maybe, and the migratory wise, people talk about we shoot our own birds for doves early in the season, right? But we do, does your data show you that we do receive migratory doves at some number?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah, we annually harvest several doves that have been banded out of state. All over from Ontario, south from the Dakotas all the way over to Maine, and birds come down. We're kind of Alabama's kind of the funnel. We're not the funnel for ducks. That would be Louisiana, but we're kind of the funnel for doves.
Really?
Yeah, exactly.
All right. So that hope springs eternal. And I appreciate that because I'm tired of seeing the same six jokers. They need to get some friends here so I could have a shoot. Seth, if people want to get more information on duck seasons, dove seasons, all that stuff, where's the best place to go?
Yeah, outdooralabama.com. We have pages for each of those species. We also have our waterfowl guide there. So check that out. You can type it in the search box or click on the hunting tab and search for the season's bag limits and more information about those species.
All right, Seth, as always, I appreciate it, and we'll talk again soon.
Thanks, guys.
Seth. Migratory Game Bird Coordinator for the state of Alabama, Seth Maddox, our guest. Come back. We're going to talk some bass fishing on the causeway. Captain Wayne Miller joins us. All right. It's all straight ahead. Right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward. Glad to have you all along. And always good to talk to our buddy Captain Wayne Miller, who is, he's always catching fish and he's always fishing. But this is a time of year I get
right now.
Did you use the term whack fest with us earlier? Is that what?
I really did. tell you what, man, this week it's just, anybody that knows me and a lot of the other guys that are, really avid fishermen here on the Delta know these conditions with a big cold front, north wind blowing, and we've also got just a bull tide that's pulling hard in the morning first thing. I mean, it just doesn't get any better than that. I mean, it's a combination, that we just absolutely love to have. The fishing night, depending on where you are, it's really different every day. And that's not uncommon for the Delta. I mean, most of the bass fishermen around here joke about, our patterns last about 30 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, when you talk about impoundments all over the Southeast, people talk about, yeah, man, we got on a pattern last week for the tournament next week.
Right.
You don't do that here. Depending on where you go, it's like, this past Monday, we had that front really moving in with strong north winds. And, I stayed in some of the creeks just to, stay off the, the big open water down along the causeway. And, I caught in about 4 hours fishing that morning, probably caught close to 50 fish.
Man.
And all of them on a shaky head. Well, then,
you know, Tuesday is when we really had that first morning of cold, cold weather. You know, it was like 28 when I launched my boat. Well, you know, I ran to a different area of the lower delta, and, you know, the water temperature was actually 59, 60 degrees most of the places I was fishing. So, you know, I really tried to slow down because the day before I had caught them, you know, on a shaky head.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, man, I fished for over an hour and, you know, nothing. And so finally I said, well, you know, this isn't working out too good. I'm kind of slow, but I finally picked up on it. You know, so I started trying some different things. Well, I ended up putting on a crankbait, and, you know, I caught about 40 fish that morning, you know, on a crankbait. But it's a different, you know, I was in a different area fishing a different creek, you know, primarily fishing ledges and outside bends that had, you know, drops on them. So I wasn't fishing grass, you know, and depending on what type of cover you're targeting, you know, be it eelgrass or, you know, ribbon grass, or if you're just fishing ledges when the water pulls down hard, you know, you have to adapt. You know, from day to day. But the great thing, I have not talked to anybody that's been out that over the course of a morning or a day, you know, has not made adjustments and found a way to catch quite a few fish.
I know. I was thinking about you when this front came through, Wayne. I said, I know Wayne's out fishing right now. And, you know, I know you fish mainly creeks when the water – when the weather gets like this and you have a north wind and blowing the water out, don't you fish mainly creeks, or do you fish the river too some?
Yeah, you know, I'll primarily target the creeks, right? But, you know, there's still some good fishing on the main rivers. But, you know, the challenge you have with them is, you know, especially on the, you know, on the when those fronts initially are coming in, is, you know, typically the wind will get so bad out there. And just boat control and being able to cast is really a challenge. But yeah, the creeks are definitely, you know, the place to be. And, you know, we talk about it all the time. And the great thing about, you know, the delta this time of year, especially, you know, the middle and the lower delta, is there's no mystery about where the fish are going. I mean, the fish are going to load in the creeks adjacent to the bay, because that's where they stay for the winter.
Yeah.
I mean, they're waiting on the spring, and, you know, they're going to be moving into those bays to spawn. But they're going to spend the winter in those creeks. So we've seen a pretty dramatic, you know, migration of fish. And typically that's initiated every year on the water temperature. I mean, you know, I've always told people, you know, fish don't have a calendar. I mean, you know, they don't know, you know, what day of the month it is, but, man, they sure know when that water cools off, they know it's time to start that move. And, man, when they start piling in these creeks, just the sheer numbers of fish is absolutely incredible.
So why do you think they go in the creeks, Wayne? I mean, is it because of deep water or?
Well, you know, it's you know, and deep water, you know, on the middle and lower deltas, you know, really a relative term, because, you know, when we start talking about deep water down there, we're talking about 6 feet of water.
Right.
You're like, man,
right,
you know, there's deep water in that creek.
Yeah.
But, you know, the great thing is with the minimal amount of really severe cold weather we have, you know, anywhere from 4 to 6 feet of water is plenty of water for these fish to, you know, stay, you know, through the winter. And I think the primary reason, you know, they migrate out of the rivers into these creeks is because, you know, typically in December and January, we're going to start getting those floods. Well, you get just phenomenal volumes of muddy, you know, current coming down those main rivers. Now, it blows through creeks, too, but it's minimized quite a bit versus what the current in the main rivers are.
Sure.
So those fish aren't going to stay out there in that river and fight that and wait and move into those bays, you know, when it's time to spawn. They're going to pile up in those creeks because it's just, it's so much more advantageous for them to stay there in the wintertime, and, you know, especially when we start getting those spring floods.
Now, are they, and we just got a minute or so here, are they, those fish, have they all transitioned out of the bay yet, or do you think you'd still find some there around the bays?
Oh, you still find some around the bays, too. I mean, it, you know, but like right now, you know, what you really got to, you know, piece together every day is, you know, when you go out there and get started, you know, you'll have some water, but I mean, we got a really strong tide right now. I mean, we're looking at 1.5 to 2 feet of water, you know, over the course of a half a day.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, those fish are going to be in areas that, you know, they've got deep water, you know, pretty close by. So, you know, big flats, even though they may have tremendous grass on them, typically you won't, when we have these kind of tides, you won't find a lot of fish stacked up on those flats. You know, they want to be out on those edges, and that's the kind of thing you have to target. You just have to, you know, figure out what the best bait is. I mean, we've been power fishing, man. I mean, we've been catching them on spinner baits, on chatter baits, you know, and even some top water. But, you know, buzz baits and things
crank
like
baits.
That. Yeah, I've been catching a lot on crank baits, too. But,
that makes Mike happy.
Yeah.
But, and the shaky heads.
You know, and occasionally, I mean, it's like the other day, you know, when I was in that creek and I really couldn't get anything, you know, I couldn't put anything together. And really one of my go-to baits when I, you know, when I'm struggling is I'll pick up a shaky head. And man, you know, the fish were stacked in there, but they were just, they weren't real active. They didn't want to chase anything down. But, you know, I was still able to put together a 40, almost a 50 fish morning, you know, just throwing that shaky head.
And what about, are you keeping a DOA rigged, or are we past that now?
You know, we're really not. A good friend of mine launched at Bayer a couple of days ago, and he told me, you know, he wasn't paying attention, and as he idled out, you know, to get out to the river, he ran on that bar, and he said when he did, man, about 6 shrimp jumped in the boat.
Mm-hmm. So they're still around.
And where was that at?
Yeah.
No, really, so, I didn't hear where you said he launched.
Mayor, okay, yeah. Okay.
You know, so, I mean, these fish, you know, and you're still seeing, I mean, there's a lot of guys down there, you know, fishing with live shrimp, and, I mean, that's still just red hot. I mean, those fish, when they can find the shrimp, they're going to take care of business. And a DOA is still a good bait. I still have one on the deck, and, you know, I'm still catching fish on it.
So, I mean, but like you said, you got to have all, because it's changing so much, your pattern lasting for 30 minutes or so. I mean, be ready to do something else. Don't just do what you did the day before.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and it's, you know, you really have to pay attention to things. You know, I mean, it's always, you know, they always say, you know, every bite tells you something if you just pay attention to it. You know, you want to know what exactly you were doing with the bait when you got the bite. You know, where the bait was in relation to the cover that you're fishing, you know, the speed you were retrieving it at. I mean, and so many times down there, man, I mean, if you can just replicate those conditions, you'll just catch fish after fish. So it's really important to pay attention to what's going on when you're fishing.
I tell you yeah, I know that we can learn a lesson pretty quickly. I was just thinking about this. They can go with you and learn about that change and when you change.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, you know, I've always been fortunate to, you know, had the opportunity over the course of my life to fish with some really good fishermen. And that's something that I've always observed when you get in the boat with those kind of guys, man, is they pay attention to details. And, you know, it's real easy to say that, and people kind of minimize it, but it does make a difference. It makes, just a tremendous difference. You know, I mean, just really, you know, honing in on one or two things during the course of a day can mean the difference between catching 10 fish and catching 35.
Well, I like that 35 a lot more. Tell folks how they can get a trip booked with you and go to do some catching right now.
They can reach me at 251-455-7404.
Captain Wayne, get back to doing your thing and catching them, and we'll talk to you soon.
Okay, guys. Have a great one.
You too. Captain Wayne Miller checking in, and we're checking out. Prep Sports Report on the way next. Talk to you next week.